I'm Meg McLeod, and Julian's widow. I was married to him. We got together soon after he came to Asheville, and we were married until he passed away here in Asheville in 2001.
And this documentary is focused on Julian Price. Could you tell me who Julian Price was?
Julian Price was a philanthropist, and he did unbelievable amount of things here in Asheville from the time that he moved here, almost as soon as he got settled here, until the time that he died. He did a lot of stuff for Asheville to help it become a more beautiful and friendly place for everybody, not just for one class of people.
Could you tell me how you guys met?
Yeah. We met at the food co-op, the French Broad Food Co-op. They were trying to raise money to move into the building that they're now in at 90 Biltmore Avenue. They were in a place in the River District before it was the River District, when it was kind of run down. And they were trying to move to a place where more people would see them, where they'd get more traffic. And they were having a fundraiser that they called an open house to get the money. And I didn't know this, but Julian had loaned them the money so that they could do the loan and do it. And so that was kind of what the celebration was about. And I had just come out of a dance class, and a friend of mine said, "Oh, you want to go to that open house?" "Oh, yeah." "So you going to go?" "Yeah, okay." So I went, and I was a performing artist in residence, so I didn't have very much money, but I gave my little contribution. Brenda Sconyers showed me the way out to the little place where the tables are now. And there was Julian and Jim Samsel. I didn't know Julian. I did know Jim, and Jim introduced us, and I thought Julian was darling. He had the sweetest smile and had a little mischievous twinkle in his eye and had a beautiful voice, and he was good looking too. And so we got to talking, and I said, "Well, what do you do?" And Julian said, and Jim said, "He's an entrepreneur," because I was a solo artist at that time. I thought, "Oh, entrepreneur. Oh, well, I'm kind of that too." And we just kept talking, and for me, it was love at first sight.
Karen told me that he was actually thinking that he might move to New Bern at the time. He was just
Yes.
visiting Asheville at the time, so he
Yeah.
didn't yet live there. And that he was standing on the corner of, I think it was Walnut and Haywood, and just fell in love with Asheville and decided right then and there, I guess, that he wanted to plant his roots in Asheville, so to speak.
He had already put money down on a condominium in New Bern, as a matter of fact. He was standing between the two buildings that later he bought and renovated. They were gorgeous but empty and run down. And in the distance, he could see Beaucatur Mountain, and he burst into tears, and he didn't know why. So, but he did know that he had to move here.
So Julian was an extraordinary man, obviously. When you met him, you say that there was electricity right away. When did you start to realize, or did you ever realize until after the fact, that Julian was going to be so instrumental in shaping Asheville as we know it today?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know if it was going to work, what he was trying to do, because at the beginning he had so much resistance. What he chose to work on first was pedestrian issues. And at that time in the 90s, one business owner later told me, "We thought Julian was nuts. Nobody cared about people to walk, and nobody wants to walk. So why care about pedestrian safety?" And he didn't say it that harsh, but. So I didn't know if what Julian was doing was going to work, but I thought it was fantastic. And if it did work, it would make a huge difference in downtown. As a child, I had always ridden my bike, and we lived close enough to town where I could ride my bike and walk to town. And I loved when I was in school, you know. I was so happy the first day I was allowed to ride my bike to school. And so I knew the freedom and the independence that it would offer old people and young and kids to be able to do that safely. And then also, before I met him, I had one of the concerts that I developed was what kids can do to help the environment. This was back in the late 80s. This was right after the Exxon Valdez oil spill. And I had to do a lot of research in adult books because there weren't any children's books. And one of the things I learned at that time was that one of the friendliest things you can do to the environment is to make downtown living something attractive for people. So I totally got what he was trying to do.
And did you also share his passion for the building up Asheville in the way that he did?
Oh my gosh, yeah. He had all these fabulous books in his shelves, and one of them was, several of them by Jane Jacobs, who was talking about this before Julian even was, and he knew about her before I did. Anyway, I was reading her, and I said one time, Julian, we got to get more residential downtown. That's the key to everything. And this was when he was had already bought Carolina Apartments, and they were renovating the building that Malaprops is in the Penny's building across the street from it. And he said, Meg, I'm going as fast as I can. So I guess in that sense, we were kind of walking alongside each other, and I somehow didn't get that he was already doing what I thought needed to be done.
So I'm sure you have so many fond memories of Julian. Are there any that stand out for you that you mind sharing?
Well, the first thing that came to my mind when you said that was, I remember one time we were eating at the dinner table, and I do not remember what I said or what he said, but he had these great big huge white napkins, and he picked up the white napkin and put it over his head and just continued to carry on the conversation like that, just to be stupid. And then another time we watched this movie that had this man that had this really funny way of walking. And after we watched the movie, Julian would walk around the apartment like that.
All the time?
Yeah, well, yeah, just whenever he was just feeling frolicky.
Whenever you felt like it. So the napkin thing, was that like a shocking thing, or was that something it was like, oh, that's Julian just being Julian?
Yeah, just to get some laughs.
Yeah.
One time I said, Julian, you are so funny, and I feel bad that you make me laugh all the time, but I don't make you laugh so much. I'm not so funny. And he said, Meg, I don't want to laugh at you so much. I want you to laugh at me. He loved it to make people laugh and to have a good time like that.
How would you describe Julian's personality if you had to?
He was a very private person. He was sometimes fearful that people thought poorly of him because he was an inherited wealth person. And I guess in America, some people feel that you should earn your money and that, you know, you got to work hard to be worthwhile. So that was difficult for him to be out in public for people to know. And sometimes he thought that they thought that about him, even if they didn't know him, that they were judging him. And that's one reason he resisted playing golf for a long time, even though he had loved the game when he was in his teens, because people also judge people who play golf, because you kind of have to have some money to be able to play it. So there's that. He was very, very intelligent and so smart that sometimes he would crack jokes and I wouldn't know if he was just a dumb, dumb person or really, really smart and hilarious. And then he was very kind, incredibly generous. I mean, he just loved to give money to people that he thought deserved it. And he was very loyal. One time we were having some problems in our relationship, and we were talking about breaking up. He had asked me to quit my performing job to be with him several years ago, and I knew that if we broke up, I'd have to start working again, which I didn't want to do. He kept asking me to marry him, and I didn't want to because I'd been married once, and I thought that that meant that the getting married had ruined that relationship. And finally, one time I said, okay, I'll marry you, but I'll only do it if you'll be willing to sign a prenup that says that I don't get anything after we break up, because I didn't want the marriage to mess anything up with the relationship, because I just loved him. I just loved being with him. I didn't want me to get weird about that.
Uh-huh.
And so he said he would. And so then when we thought we might have to break up, he said, you know, Meg, if we do break up, you're not going to go with nothing. I'm going to make sure you're taken care of for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. You know, it sounds like when you were describing him in the beginning, that it sounds like he was almost embarrassed by his wealth a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Not almost.
Yeah. And
at the beginning, yeah.
I'm thinking, like, how could that happen? And I'm thinking probably, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like he surrounded himself with people who didn't have the same means that he did. Is that why it kind of embarrassed him, that he wasn't of the same economic class?
You know, it's hard to get into somebody else's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at movies, I don't watch too many movies now, so there may be more these days, but the movies of the last 50 years, the last 30 years, that when Julian was alive and watching, if you can find more than a handful that have leading characters that are inherited wealth people that are not jerks, I'd love to see them.
Oh, okay.
It's just in our culture. You know, he knew that because he liked popular culture and he kept up with stuff. So he knew that it's just in our culture to look down on people that are inherited wealth. I'm sure not everybody does that, but I think it's a lot of people that do.
It seems like he's complicated, too, because it sounds like, you know, you mentioned him being very private, but he sounds like also a very gregarious character. Mm-hmm. And he also concerned himself so much in what was going on in the city of Asheville and what happened to the people in Asheville. How did those two reconcile?
They reconciled when he got here. That's what is such a beautiful thing about the documentary that's going to be shown the 26th at the Orange Peel, because that is a conundrum. How could those two things exist in one person? And when he got to Asheville, he had been working, I guess you could say, all his life to be able to get up the gumption and the strength of character to come into a place where he would be known, he would be seen, he would be known for who he was, and be able to do that and to do all the activist stuff. I mean, he wrote these letters and letters and letters to the city hall at that time. They just would not pay attention to what he was saying that was dangerous for people. And he kept doing it. And he had this belief about himself that he didn't have any good stick-to-itiveness and that he gave up on things because the way that his interest went, often he would get really interested in something, it'd last for about 2 years, and then he'd be ready to move on to something else. And he interpreted that as not having any good stick-to-itiveness. And I think maybe that was true in some things, but when he got here, he had tremendous perseverance to keep trying, even though he kept getting slapped in the face mm-hmm. by some of the powers that be.
Did you ever have to help encourage him in those moments?
I didn't have to, but I wanted to.
Do you think he would have done it on his own?
No.
Had you not helped out in some of those instances?
I think that anybody that was facing what he was facing when he came here with the resistance would have given up if they hadn't had encouragement. It was really crazy. It wasn't just the city hall. It was also Department of Transportation in North Carolina at that time. And he got encouragement from Monroe Gilmore and from Pat and Karen at Public Interest Projects and Calvin and some of my friends, too, who just loved him. He was such a gentle person and also, you know, just endearing, that humor and that intelligence. They understood what he was trying to do. And then when he started doing the City Watch magazine that came out of all that resistance, the people that read his magazine loved it. And he really invited them to begin, you know, please let me know what your experience is with City Hall and their responsiveness. Let me know if there are any problems that you've experienced. And he got all these different ideas, and then he'd go out there and meet with them. And he loved that. Mm-hmm. So that was the stepping stone that he needed to get over feeling embarrassed about being who he was just with regular people. He had an affinity for just regular people, and he had an amazing intuition about what bothered them, like dogs barking in neighborhoods, you know, or trash pickup, just simple things that sometimes big corporations and some kinds of city halls don't get, that those are the important things. You know, it's like he said in the first issue of the magazine, we want to solve these big global problems. They're important and we do want to solve them, but what about the little things? Dying trees, places where there's just no place for a pedestrian to walk, you know, so you have to walk on a little pathway where other people have walked on a busy highway because there's no sidewalk. Those things make you unhappy in an already stressful world, and why not pay attention to those little things too?
Yeah, he had a great attention for detail.
Uh-huh. He said he would tend to say God is in the details.
So you mentioned a couple of memories that you had of special times that you and him had. Are there any moments that stick out to you as far as what Julian meant to Asheville or sort of encapsulated who he was for the city?
It would be really interesting to go around and ask different people that question. I would love to hear the answers. I think for the people where he went out and spoke to them from his City Watch articles, and he collected their ideas and put it in paper. Sometimes the Mountain Express would also, they had a little thing called Dysfunction Junction that featured those complaints too. They would just think, well, gosh, he's just a really nice guy, and he helped me get what I cared about in my little neighborhood street out. I really appreciate that. And other people who he funded to help them get their projects going, they would say probably the same thing, you know. If it hadn't been for Julian, I wouldn't be able to have this restaurant downtown that I dreamed about having. Mm-hmm. He helped me realize my dreams, I think, maybe would be, well, that would be what I would say.
How did the documentary about Julian come about?
Ever since he died, after I got over some of the heavy grieving, I really wanted more people than me and his, and you know, the people that he had helped and worked with. I wanted a big audience to know about his process and about his tools and about his funny style and all that, because I feel like what he did here is remarkable and really unusual. The whole twist about him being a man of inherited wealth and having trouble with that, but finding a small town where he could actually get over that and do what he loved to do, all that, I just wanted the world to know about that. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't sure what form it would take, and I started talking to people about 2 years ago, and it went through different permutations. But then when Karen got on the team, she had the idea of making the articles, getting the articles written by Dorothy Fulce Gray, and one of those is came out in the Mountain Express today. And also, as a team, we decided a video or film might be a documentary interview. I wanted to get the people that knew him interviewed before they died. We thought about doing it ourselves. Anyway, finally we decided, we found Erin, and we thought, we're going to ask her to do it for us. Mm-hmm. So that's how that happened.
Okay, great. What is it going to be like for you to see this? I assume it's finished, I guess, by now.
So I think
it's,
so.
Uh-huh. Oh, so you haven't seen it in its entirety
I
yet?
I haven't seen it at all. I've only seen the trailers that everybody else has seen.
Oh, I see. Well, what do you think that's going to be like for you watching this documentary?
I'm probably going to cry. Karen says, be sure to bring a box of Kleenex. So
for everybody, not just you?
She's been saying that to everybody.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's some very funny moments in it, and there's some very touching moments in it, and it's I just hear it's an amazing film. But yeah, I cry easy, so I'll probably cry, but it's okay.
Yeah, and I mean, you've had the memories of Julian with you all this time.
Yeah.
So it won't be entirely new for you, of course.
No. One thing I'm really looking forward to is hearing all the stories. I loved reading the articles that Dorothy wrote, because I've found out so many things about Julian and what he did that I didn't even, I mean, he was all over the place. It was mm-hmm. incredible how many different venues, this and 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 all those pieces he knew would help the downtown be better, and he would just encourage him in different ways. And also a lot through Pat and Karen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Karen told me that he kind of despised the limelight.
Yeah.
And he would make donations anonymously and
right.
stuff. So I'm sure there are tons of stories out there where Julian did something probably really great for someone and we won't ever know about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard one of those the day after he died. Anderson, who had a hot dog stand outside our house, Julian was just so friendly and kind to just everybody that he met on the street. And Anderson said, did your husband pass away? Because I think he had seen them take the body out. And I said, yes. And he said, he was such a good man. He said, he helped me. I said, oh, how did he help you? And he said, well, he helped me. I knew that Anderson had a program for young at-risk youth called Men on the Move. And he said, he helped me with my organization to help it. So I wouldn't have had a clue about that if Anderson hadn't told me.
Well, Meg, it's been great talking to you. I think those are the questions I had about Julian. Is there anything else that you want to say about the documentary or about Julian?
Well, first of all, just to make sure that you know, the documentary is going to be at the Orange Peel at 7:30, May the 26th. And it's a combination with also the CD release party for the Asheville Sessions, which is an amazing CD that is the Asheville Symphony backing up some of the top area local musicians. They offered that for free. It's an amazing gift for the soundtrack for the film, and that's going to be that the 26th. There's several articles in the Mountain Express that came out today, and they're also going to be online if they're not already. And the other thing is just to invite you listeners out there, if you have a dream of something that you'd like to do, to know that it's important. Even though it may seem to other people like it's not important, if it's a dream of yours, it is important, and to believe in yourself.
All right. Well, Meg McLeod, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.